No, there was some, which is fine because I knew enough.
Well, I didn't just say that because a lot of the times I find these good movies on Netflix and then it's like, it's in Norwegian or something. And I'm like, I don't want to read the whole movie.
Do you know what I actually saw? Have you seen Life is Beautiful? You have to do subtitles the whole time, but it's like one of my favorite movies.
What is it?
It's I think that's what it's called. It's in French subtitles, and it's like the guy, he's in a concentration camp, and he's got his son, and his son doesn't know what's going on, and so like he makes up this alternate reality for his son, so his son doesn't have to realize that like
I think I've seen
gonna
that. Yeah,
die in this like. It's kind of a weird thing where he just like makes this fake world for his son,
mm-hmm.
and just like the perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've seen that. Yeah, it's been a while. I watched like every movie made about the Holocaust like when I was in college. You know, I was fascinated by it.
Oh, this is when you believed it wasn't real, right?
Yeah, It's crazy how many people are that. Like that seems like that's gaining momentum that people are like acting like
all
it was all made up and
are.
Stuff, you know,
yeah.
It's just
you
like,
think that's partly because of distance in history?
Probably. Yeah.
It's got to at
and
least contribute to
a lot of
level.
People are, there's this, I don't know. It seems like anti-Jew stuff is growing a lot too
mm-hmm.
on like both sides really.
Yeah.
On the fringes of both sides to where it's like, it's all the Jews, you know, like I will never really understand that. I guess I don't understand the, I don't know. I haven't looked into it enough, I guess. But
well, on the subtitles thing, when you get your Neuralink, I wonder if you'll just
that'd
be able
great.
To download the language and
yeah.
you won't need to worry about the subtitles.
That'd be great.
The glasses, right?
Oh.
That you can just wear and it'll read the subtitles and it'll like block out the sound of the German voices and put in English.
Well, there you go.
Maybe there was something like that. That's the problem with the subtitles isn't necessarily that I don't like to read them. It's that Megan doesn't like to read them.
Mm.
And so then I can't ever watch any of those foreign movies.
And you can't read it fast enough.
I can't read it
to keep up for her.
Yeah. Right. With the changing voices.
And for the record, he said he can't read, he can't watch any of the foreign movies. Sounded like something else he said. Okay.
What? Are we recording?
We are recording.
Wonderful.
Meaningful Happiness Exploratory Episode Number 1.
All right.
The proverbial clap. So the last episodes we did, we were doing on time freedom. And so like we kind of explored all these different ways of creating time freedom and creating an environment that makes it easier to have time freedom. And then from there, there's a problem because if you have a ton of time on your hands and you spend it doom scrolling on TikTok, like it, maybe you just made your life worse by creating all this time freedom. Mm-hmm. What is the phrase that they say? Idle hands is a devil's workshop or something.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah. Very
yeah.
good.
So, playground, I've heard it. Heard it that way too.
Yeah. So what do we do with all our time freedom and how do we have meaningful happiness? And so that's what we're going to explore in these upcoming episodes. I'm actually pretty excited about these ones. There's a lot of good stuff that we can cover. So this one is... the principle of happiness of spending on experiences instead of things. So the hook is, you know, we chase upgrades, new phones, new clothes, new furniture, believing each one will lift us. But no matter how nice the purchase, the thrill fades fast. Meanwhile, the memory of a random road trip or a night laughing with friends lingers for years, right? And so it turns out happiness doesn't come from what you own. It comes from what you live. So the big idea is owning things rarely changes who you are. Experiences, even brief ones, become part of your identity. And that's where real meaning and happiness hides. So here's a couple of thought experiments. Imagine two people. Person A buys a $3,000 couch. It's comfortable, beautiful, admired by visitors. Within weeks, they barely notice it. And then person B spends the same amount on a weekend getaway with close friends. They come back with inside jokes, stories, and photos that they'll laugh at for years. So both spent money, only one bought a memory. The question is how much we spend, or the question isn't how much we spend, it's what kind of story our spending writes. So those are kind of like the opening thoughts. And then it has some questions here. First of all, do we agree that experiences bring more lasting happiness than possessions? And if so, why?
Well, I think the first thing that strikes me when I hear that is like, that's a very millennial kind of way of thinking about things, because that was a huge thing with millennials was experiences. So they're going to go to the tip of Southern Africa and like do all that kind of travel and work-life balance. And it's not about accumulating things. It's about accumulating experiences. And to me, it's all consumption, like either way, you know, like you're just consuming experiences the same way you would be consuming couches, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it can not necessarily be meaningful, as well, but the boomers, it was about accumulating things. Like they were a lot more interested in that. And I think that's why the millennials sort of like rejected that and went to the experiences thing. Plus millennials had a lot less money. So, experiences can be free, if you want them to be. The boomers, it was more like it was meaningful to accumulate all those things because it showed to society that you were hardworking, you were successful, you were, you know, you deserved adulation and all the social sort of praise, and the items were sort of the gateway to the experience. So you buy a boat because you have these experiences on the boat. And but I don't know, I guess I'm more millennial in a lot of ways. So I'm more like, yeah, experiences are better, you know, although a lot of those also cost a lot of money, you know? So it's, you know, like I'd rather hang out with my friends for a night than go and spend money on a thing or whatever. Like things aren't all that interesting.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think, you bring up an interesting point, which was what the second question, you know, are there exceptions? Can objects sometimes become experiences like a guitar or a surfboard? Basically, they're enabling an experience. And so it is kind of a blurred line. So I think this is one of those things that is kind of like a spectrum, you know, where on one side you have things that are like fully experiential, and then other things that are just like a possession that doesn't have a lot of an experiential value. And I think there's things that are kind of in the middle. So I agree with you that I think that meaningful experiences does, you know, lead to like happiness or joy. I don't know what's the difference between happiness and joy. I don't know.
I mean, I do think that you're onto something there. The connection with purchases with meaning. You were talking about like what could potentially be something that's a gateway to an experience. And it might be a gateway to memory too. And this is what I was thinking about when I was growing up in Montana. I didn't live there, but I went out and visited my grandfather. He had a Honda 90 scooter, and we would ride that all over the place. He lived out in the country, and so we'd ride down get the mail and all over, and it was fun. We beat that thing up. Well, as an adult, I bought a scooter, and the scooter was fun, but it wasn't just the experience of riding the scooter. It was also like bringing back all of those memories. My grandfather had a scooter. I rode it. Someday I'll get to ride my scooter with my grandson. And so I think I enjoy riding the scooter, but it was more about the meaning of the relationship that I had with my grandfather and the memories. So even thinking of like, hear the story of the man who had a car in high school and then he had to sell it. And then 30 years later, he tracks it down and he buys it and he restores it. He bought a thing, but the thing was tied to meaning. So it's not just anything. I think it gains value if it's tied to a relationship or a meaningful memory or something that you value in your life.
Sure. So an experience could be the same as an object in that sense that it could be a unique experience, but it might not be meaningful.
Yeah.
And so it's really the meaning is the core sort of issue, whether it's an object or an experience. So yeah.
Yeah. Daniel Tosh has a funny bit on this. I don't know if you've heard,
I haven't watched him for a while,
but yeah, he was saying, like, you know, something about people say money can't buy happiness. He's like, you show me someone on a jet ski that doesn't have a smile on their face. You know, so I think that, you know, there is a point here is that, like, I mean, imagine someone who buys like a really expensive fancy Lamborghini and it just sits there and that, like, they don't dare to drive it. And like, I could see that becoming something that, like, doesn't have a high value of return on meaningful happiness. But I could also see someone else buying a Lamborghini and taking it to different premieres and things and that. And he's always, you know, taking it out and then using it as a tool to foster connection with other people, where it could lead to more meaningful happiness. Because I think what I'm gathering from this is that what brings happiness is connection, memory, and, you know, being able to strengthen bonds with people, you know, friends, family, and community. And so possessions can be used as a catalyst to kind of spur on that. And so it's more about your mindset of how you're focused on, how am I going to use this? Is this something that would integrate into my community in a way that would help foster meaningful connections? Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So what types of experiences should we orient around? So, like, some of the, for building these deep bonds, adventure, creation, service. So, like, going out and doing epic trips with people, or creation would be like building a business with someone, or doing, you know, creating a podcast and getting two of your friends to come do a podcast at once a week, right? That's creating something.
Absolutely.
Or service, like serving others. Like, is there, like, are all three good? Is there one that, like, should be oriented to the most?
I think it depends on the person. It depends on what other bucket's already full. I think if you are full of, as part of your job or your daily routine, serving, then probably that's not going to, adding in more service probably isn't going to add much to your bucket. But if you're low on something else, and there's some people, like my wife is not really prone to adventure. Her happiness doesn't come from adventure. It comes from stability and predictability and all of those things. So for somebody who's driven for adventure, that would probably be more the thing than something else. Yeah. So I think it depends. I have a feeling that all three of them are meaningful. It has to align with your sense of values. So somebody who values service to others, they're going to find meaning in that experience. And you can blend them. Like a short-term mission trip to a third world country, which I don't think they call it that anymore. It's one third of the world or something. I can't remember what they call it, but, and you go with people that you enjoy and you do an act of service. It's an adventure, it's service, and you're building relationships and memories all at the same time. I think that's one of the reasons those are so powerful.
Yeah. I think the key really is, you know, since we're such social creatures, I really think a lot of it revolves around other people, you know? So as long as you're with people that are aligned with your values, like if you're all adventure seekers, like you're going to really build a lot of interesting experiences and relationships that way. And so I think, you know, the meaning and the happiness, like the very foundation of it all, is probably relationships with other people, family and friends. And, you know, then you can sort of, maybe that relationship is you restore cars together, you know, like, but doing it by yourself might be kind of empty, you know, because it's, you don't have anybody to share it with and you don't have anybody to experience it with. But sorry, I was going somewhere with that and I forgot where I was going.
No, you're fine.
Well, it kind of reminds me of how many of the businesses that have somebody and sons or somebody and family. Mm-hmm. And there's probably some depth of heritage of sharing that experience as a family, of building that business, doing the work, passing it on to my kids. and then the grandkid doesn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just that the grandkid doesn't want to do it. They're losing that depth of connection, that sense of purpose, that we built this together. It's provided for our family. You're rejecting your heritage. I mean, mm-hmm. all the things. So it's almost like if they're involved, then it deepens it. But if they reject it, then it like brings a depth of unhappiness that you wouldn't if it was just something
else.
Well,
that's kind of a segue here that I've been thinking about or kind of noticing. Do you guys think that kids, like high school or college age kids, are more likely to do what their parents do? Have you noticed this at all? Or like want to go into a field that their parents do rather than in the past? Like, I think when I was that age, I don't think anybody wanted to do what their parents did. But now I've seeing a lot of these kids who their parents are real estate agents. So then they want to be a real estate agent. Their dad's an electrician. Then they go and be an electrician and work with him. Sort of like kind of back to more of an old timey way of thinking about it. I don't know. Maybe that's just I'm randomly running into people who are doing that. But I wonder if that's becoming more of a thing as the job market's like more unstable and kids don't know, like, well, should I go to 4-year college? Should I go to trade school?
Yeah.
It's sort of when I was that age, it was like you go to a 4-year school and that's it.
I think that might be the thing that might be being tapped into, the sense of before there was a clear path and there was fairly amount of security that if you take a path, it's going to turn out good.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe now there's like so many options. Like the two options, I can get a job or be a YouTuber. Like those are the two options that be an influencer. And they're discovering, well, maybe since I don't know, I'll take that path.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, if you ask my kids, they want to be streamers and YouTubers.
Where'd they get that idea? Podcaster.
Yeah. So here's some biases that are kind of at play here. One that's interesting is called duration neglect. Our brains remember emotional peaks, not total time or cost. And so like a short, meaningful experience can outweigh years of quiet comfort with a thing. So like the strategy here is to engineer your life to create more peak moments instead of longer periods of mild satisfaction. And so, when I think about this, like when I think of my childhood, like there's not like specific, like I don't remember like, oh, that was a good year of my life or that was there's like moments that I remember, like peak moments or like, and I don't even remember the actual things as much. It's just like more feelings around like my dad was like, I mean, we took a lot of trips to like Lake Powell and did these adventures and like those peak moments, like my dad helped me have adventures when I was young. And that's what I remember, right? Those peak moments. And so the idea here is like, maybe you can optimize for those peak moments rather than trying to like create a sustainably high level of baseline. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I think as an adult, you have to figure out what are the things that will enable you to experience your peak moments better. One example would be you buy an expensive bed. Okay, that's not a peak moment. Maybe the buying of it feels good because you know, hey, I stressed over what bed to buy forever and I finally picked one and I'm sleeping well. So maybe there's that, but that might diminish. But having good rest and good sleep over a period of time is going to make you healthier, going to help you to have better experience. So as an adult, you have to decide things like, oh, I know that this is not going to be something that I'm going to bring up when somebody says, how are you doing? I'm great. I got a good bed. You know, you're probably not going to do that. But you might say, I'm great. I'm feeling good. I went on this 50-mile hike with some buddies, and it's partially as a result of making that one-time purchase, that's not a peak moment. So I think it is building towards peak moments, but try to eliminate the things that are holding you back from having the ability. Because if I, as an adult getting older, try to stay healthy, it's not just so that I pass a certain goal and said, I made it to 90. It's not that. It's that I stayed healthy enough to continue having those meaningful experiences with people.
Cool. Well, I wanted to kind of shift this one, like now that we kind of understand this, I want to just quickly run through some of the biases that are at play here and then like some of the strategies. I'm just going to run through these quickly and then we'll start to think about like how could we design an environment where we would naturally gravitate more towards focusing our money and our time on experiences, right? So some of the biases here, we talked about duration neglect. So the strategy would be to design many peak moments in everyday life, sunset walks, shared meals, spontaneous adventures. Happiness doesn't depend on length, but intensity and connection. And then scarcity bias, don't overindulge, make joy a treat. So instead of a weekly takeout, host a monthly Friendsgiving light, I don't know, something like that. Commitment bias, strategy, schedule recurring experiences, first Friday game night, anticipation bias. This is where you plan and maybe even like prepay for an experience that's going to be like 2 years in the future. And they found like people get as much enjoyment out of the anticipation of it as they do from the actual event. And then identity bias, frame yourself as a story collector, not as a thing collector. Label spending categories accordingly, like story fund, not entertainment. So those are some of the ideas, but I'm just kind of curious, like from the framework that we had for the time freedom, like the goal here, what I'm trying to brainstorm is like, is there ways that we could make subtle changes to our environment so that we would be more focused on creating experiences than things? So the first one that I liked that popped out the most for me there was like this idea of maybe having spending categories that you frame as like, this is my story making money, right? And then you're less likely to spend that on possessions if you like actually have a fund for it. So that would be one way to do it. I don't know. Does anything jump out for either of you guys?
Yeah, I think since you get just as much joy out of the planning and anticipation as the journey, what you should do is tell your significant other that you're going to go on a trip, plan it for a year, and then cancel, because then you don't spend the money and you get to anticipate, at least get half the fun with no cost. Okay, don't do that.
And that ends up in a peak moment.
That would definitely be a memorable moment with somebody you care about.
And then the negative impact of that would make when you actually do go on a trip so much better.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay, bad idea. Bad idea. But I like all of those different hacks, I suppose you would call them. I think there's guardrails that would help you avoid some of the negative things that would keep you from having better peak moments that you can put into place, such as if you had a system on your Wi-Fi that it shuts off at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Or 9, so that you have to have conversation with somebody you care about. I mean, there's things like that that are negative guardrails. You're just protecting against doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But there's also the positive, like, I like the idea that you threw out of, instead of having a budget to go out to eat once a week, you have a budget to do something more extravagant with friends once a month. Like, that's pretty cool. Like, you're hacking it, and you're anticipating that it's coming, and you're planning. And
yeah, so, like, maybe you could, like, set, like, I like the idea of blocking time, too. So, like, and you just, like, label it, like, so maybe you would still block out the same time each week, but that time would be like preparing for future, you know, whatever these adventures are that you're going to do, like inviting people to it, keeping them on board with it, and then, you know, anticipating, like figuring out what you're going to do. And then that once a month, so like you could still, you'd block time weekly, but it would be prepping for one of these events.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And mementos, people like to take things as
possessions.
Souvenirs.
Okay.
You know, when you come back from a place. But I think one of my favorite souvenirs is this little pink crystallized rock that I picked up. And it's not unlike a million other rocks that we walked past and walked over on a hike. But it's the only place we saw those rocks on that hike. So I picked it up, brought it home. It didn't cost me anything except, well, nothing additional. It cost me to go on the trip, but nothing additional. And it sits on my shelf. And every time I see that, it reminds me of that hike just for a moment. Mm-hmm. So things like that, like build in.
Yeah.
If memories are important and memories with people are important, then build in signals that remind you of those positive memories.
Yeah, actually, that's what I was going to say, too. Yeah. When we go on trips, we always try to buy something. And I like to do that because I don't really remember a lot of that stuff. But then it'll trigger the memory and you can kind of relive the experience. So there's kind of like this weird power that's built into these objects. And I hope that rock wasn't in a national park because I think that's illegal, right?
No, it was in your yard. We were walking around your pool.
You know, it's another one you can do is you can create a soundtrack for the experience. So I did this unintentionally the last week of high school. Me and my friends were like, we're only listening to this one Ozzy Osbourne album this entire week. That's the only thing. We just listened to these like same 10 songs over and over and over every time we were in the car. To this day, like 30 years later, whenever I hear those songs, like all those memories come back. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of did something similar when we were on a trip with a couple friends, like, I don't know, it was maybe 6 months ago. And so we were in Florida and I made some AI country songs that were just like funny, like stereotypical about drinking beer on the beach and all this kind of stuff. And so I was playing them for them. So every time I kind of run across, I'm going down the playlist, I'm like, and I listen to it, I laugh and, you know, think of the good times we had, you know, triggers all those memories. But
yeah,
so
I think that's interesting how both of you have like a music memory that's tied into an experience, and it has to be, I think, embedded. You can't just hear it once on a trip unless it's like, I was listening to this when we had a car accident.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it's not that. I was traveling with a couple of buddies. We were taking a long road trip and we were listening to a radio. So that, you know, it was a long time ago in a car, had no CDs.
Like with a knob on
yeah,
it?
There were two knobs, oh yes. Yeah, FM and AM and everything. And something happened at the station, we guessed, and they played the same song over and over. It happened twice, and we're like, well, that's weird. And it happened a third time. We said, let's not change it. Let's count. And we got to like 16, and then it went dead. So we listened to the same song 16 times in a row. Now, every time that song comes on, I think of those guys. I think of that trip, and I laugh. Not out loud, but it's like, oh, that's just, oh, that's a funny thing. Yeah, so it all brings it back.
Yeah.
So that, I love the idea of being intentional about it, like creating a playlist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And using it.
Basically, you're creating an environment that's going to trigger that memory.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got blocking time, using music. I'm wondering what else we can do, like, or could be done, someone could do to their environment where, because I think a lot of people right now are in an environment where they're just like scrolling on TikTok and they're like, oh, this shirt looks good, or this, that, or the, you know, they're constantly being told to buy things and they're not thinking about it in terms of like, is this an experiential thing? And like, I think if we were more conscious about that, I think it would lead to more meaningful happiness. But I'm just thinking, this has been a great episode. I'm just curious, is there any other kind of final thoughts on like how you could create an environment to do that? We got music, blocking time.
I think part of it is slowing down and not just trying to plan those things, but slowing down and thinking about what are the things that bring you a sense of joy so that you can start saying no to the things that don't. Not just saying no to the things that are obviously not, but the things that maybe most people would put in the category, but you're like, that doesn't really.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking about the same thing.
Be intentional.
Like, kind of knowing yourself too, and knowing like, well, what are the things that are meaningful to me? You know, maybe it's not going on trips. Maybe that doesn't hit it for you. Or maybe it's, you know, maybe it's just, you know, having a wine night with your friends and talking, doing conversation cards, you know, or something, like knowing what it is that sort of hits you in a meaningful way. And I, that sounds like it should be easy, but I don't think it's all that easy to kind of figure that stuff out. And so you sort of fall into these like, well, these are what you, the things you're supposed to find meaningful, you know, rather than the things you actually naturally do. And so
I love that. I think like what you could do is like, maybe there would be like, I wonder if you could like think about like a priority list of like, hey, these are the things that you could create a list of like, these are the things that bring the most meaningful happiness for me. Maybe like some, like me, I would probably be the adventure one.
Yeah.
You know, and then service one too. I really like the service one. So like if I made a list of like the top things that brought me meaningful happiness and I reviewed that, you know, like as I'm trying to kind of plan out my life, like what I'm going to be focused on, and I can kind of run it through that filter, I could see that being an environment where I'm more likely to make more choices around experiences.
Who was it that said an unexamined life is not worth living?
Socrates.